Morning to you. Certainly hope everyone's had a good weekend, and this being the first day of the week, certainly hope that everybody has so far benefited from the time that we have had to engage in a worship service to our Lord. If you are visiting here for the first time, I'm not the regular speaker. My name is John Haley, and I'm able to take part in the fifth Sunday practice that we have here that the elders have set up, in which the fifth Sunday one of the men get an opportunity to speak to the congregation, so I'm very appreciative to the elders for that. But I would also encourage you to come back, because you certainly, if you're here for the first time, are going to be missing out on a treat that we all sometimes, I think, take for granted, and that's hearing Brother Marty pick up. And so I encourage you to come back and be with us again, and as well Brother Jeff Smith. But come back and be with us if you have that opportunity. This morning I'm going to be taking a little bit of time speaking with you, probably a topic that is not a traditional topic for a Sunday morning lesson. Our topic this morning is going to kind of come from an experience that I had last year at the school. And as many of you know, last year I transferred to a new school. And when I got in there to this school, I had absolutely no idea about anything, any of the dynamics or the inner workings of the school. I didn't have any say-so in who was going to be at the school. I didn't hire anybody. So when I got there, I just was handed what was there. And it didn't take me very long to realize that there were some issues in dealing with some of the staff members. There was a lot of negativity in that school. And people kind of bickering back and forth. And it was nothing that was out in the open. It was all kind of behind the scenes and just a lot of negativity. And that negativity, it didn't take me long to see, was quite pervasive throughout the staff. And it didn't just affect the teachers. It affected the kids. It affected the instructional staff, the clerical, the custodian. It affected everybody. It affected me. And about 2 to 3 weeks into school, after I had started seeing some of the dynamics of my staff, my media specialist left a book on my desk. Never said anything to me. She just left it there. And in the hallway said, "I just left you something on your desk that you might want to look at." And it was a book that was entitled, "How Full Is Your Bucket?" And it was about a 100-page book, real short, real big letters, and it'd take you about a couple of hours to pass. That's my kind of book, you know. But even though as short as it was, I left it sitting there on my desk probably for about a month. And then as I, just right there on my desk, I'd see it and look at it. I need to read that but keep going and get busy. So about a month later, I was pretty desperate to come up with something to do with my staff because of the things that were going on. So I picked up that book and I took it home one weekend and I read it. And that book was a pretty important book to me as far as how I was able to stop some of the things that were going on. And so I said, well, you know what, if it works with my faculty, maybe I'll try it with my family. So I implemented it with my family, and wow, it had an impact there as well. And the whole premise of the book in How Full Is Your Bucket, it's an idea that deals with the idea of positive energy and positive relationships and the impact that positive and negative interactions have on your relationships with absolutely everybody, especially impacting yourself. Our lives are shaped by individual interactions. Do you realize, and I don't know exactly how they actually came to this number, but researchers have studied that you have about 20,000 what they call individual moments or individual interactions throughout one day. About 20,000. And most of those are dealing with people, but they don't necessarily have to be. But almost all of them have some type of negative or positive of inclination to them or impact. Most all of those 20,000 individual moments. There are really no neutral interactions with people. You may think, well, you know, that really didn't have a positive or negative. That conversation didn't have a positive or negative impact on me. But when you go back and you look at it and you see the dynamics and you see the visuals and you look at the tones and the voice inflections and the body language, all of those kind of things will end up having some type of impact on you. And if it's not a negative impact, then it's probably a positive impact. If your interactions with people are not draining from you, then they are probably doing something to leave a positive impact on you. And that's really the way relationships are designed. That's the way God has designed them. Relationships are important, and our interactions, our minds take in things far, far faster, and they process them far more quickly than we're actually able to perceive them. So a lot of these interactions that we're having, sometimes we don't really even think about the impact that they might have had until minutes or hours or even days later. But they do have an impact. And this morning, what I'd really like to do is I'd like to focus on the impact that our relationships, our visuals, our speech, our interactions have on one another. And specifically, I'd like to focus in on how they impact our children. And I'd like to look in how they impact our spouses. And I'd like to look and see how they impact on us as one another, just as individuals who come in and out of contact with one another. And then finally, I'd like to look at the great example of God and how He has dealt with His interactions with us, and then tie that with the greatest example of what we're going to call this morning a bucket filler that we've got in the entire history of mankind. So that's really what I'd like to do. And I know I've got about 20 minutes in which to do it. It may take a few minutes longer than that, but I'm going to try to keep to our time this morning. So get ready, and then let's go, and let's take a look at this. First of all, look at the kind of way in which our society trains us. We are trained to be negative by our society. Now, I want you to think how and what that means. Our society overindulges us with negativity all day long. If you look at the television shows that are on, look at the entertainment shows. You want to know what the highest rated entertainment shows are? They're dealing with immorality. They're dealing with murder. They're dealing... What shows? You got Entertainment Tonight. You got all these Fox shows. Greta. All these people. They do all their shows. And what are they focused on? Who's kidnapped? Who's murdered? Who's been sexually assaulted? Everything negative that's going on in our society is brought up. What are some of the popular shows for the younger people? They want to see the cops shows. They want to see everybody who's breaking the law and who's getting busted and who's getting caught with drugs and who's getting caught with whatever else. And they want to see all the cop chases and the people who are crazy. Some of the stupidest criminal shows, they're real popular right now. Well, they're all negative things. They're all shows which are focused on negative behaviors. And you look at the daytime shows, what kind of things do they put on daytime shows? They don't put what's going right with America. They put the most dysfunctional, negative interactions that people can possibly have. As a matter of fact, the more galling, the more negative, the more unbelievable, the more likely they are to be on daytime television. Our society absolutely shows an exhilaration for focusing on the negative aspects of our culture. And let me assure you that you do not go unimpacted by that. Those kinds of things impact us all the time. Gossip newspapers. You can't walk through the grocery store without finding every negative aspect of every physical deformity or every dysfunctional relationship with anybody who's got any kind of reputation or in the movie world. They're all right there. Everything that can possibly be identified about being negative about somebody is located right there as you're checking out. And you don't even have to pick them up to read them. They're right there on the front page. Every one of them have got something different, but they all focus on the same types of things. What's wrong with people? What's wrong with their relationships? What's wrong with their looks? What's wrong with their families? And that's true. And if you will think about the kind of things that we fill our minds with, the kind of things that we call entertainment, even though they in and of themselves are just stories, they may not have profanity, they may not have filth, but they are all negative. And you look, just take a look when you go home, and you look at your news shows, all of your politics, nobody, you would think absolutely nobody can work together anymore. Nobody can. They're all fighting. They all talk about the negatives or what the other party does that's wrong. Even within their own party, they can't get along today. It's all focused on negative. And brethren, that has an impact on us. It has an impact on us as individuals. It has an impact on how we deal with our children and our spouses and our fellow man and how we deal with our God. And I'm telling you, if we don't focus on it and if we don't figure out that there's something wrong with it and we have to change our frame of mind, we'll become just like everybody else. And we'll deal with everybody that way. We'll deal with one another that way. And we will be that kind of person. Negative people. It impacts every facet of our life. Now let me look. How does it affect our relationship with our children? In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, Paul writes, "And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord." If you flip over also to Colossians chapter 3, look in verse 21. He even says it a little bit better to me, words that I can understand better. "Children," he says in verse 20, "be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. And fathers, do not exasperate your children, that they may not lose heart." You want to know the way in which we provoke fathers, our children, to wrath, and in which we exasperate our children and cause them to lose hope? Is while we instruct and while we train, so often we focus on the negative. And it would be at this time in the lesson that I would like to excuse my own children to the restroom, for I am sure every one of them need to go about this time to the restroom at any moment now. They know that about their own father. They know that their own father has to deal with that constantly, with negativity. But I don't think I'm going to be the only one. And I don't think it's just related to fathers. But let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. In 2003, there was a Gallup poll that was done in our country, as well as seven other countries. And the Gallup poll posed this question to thousands and thousands of parents. And this was the scenario. Your child is bringing home their report card. And on their report card, they have the following grades. In English, they have an A. In social studies, they have a B+. In science, in biology, they've got an A. In PE, they have an A. And in algebra, they're flunking. The question is, which grade do you focus on and address with your children first? Well, don't raise your hands. However, I can tell you personally, I'd be all over that F. All over that F. And I'd want to know, what in the world are you? Did I not tell you you've got tutorial? Come to me for help. And when I can't help you, go to Mr. Jeff Smith. I got his number. Because that didn't take long. I think it was about fifth or sixth grade math. Mr. Smith, I need a little help. But you know what? That's exactly what I'd be. So you got five areas, and five areas of success, and one area of failure, and you know where 77, almost 80% of American parents, you know where their focus was? It was with me on the F. No time to celebrate the successes. It was on the F. What is going on? You can't get to college with this kind of math grade. You can't be the doctor or the dentist. What's wrong with you, son? Well, that's the way that we can exasperate our children. And it's not just with grades. You look at every aspect of what our children do in their lives. Their interactions with their friends. So often, they make good decisions. They do good things. And we expect that to come from them. But you let them mess up, buddy, and we're coming down on them hard. Because that's not acceptable in our house. You got to celebrate the successes. You got to celebrate and talk about the positives before the negatives can really be addressed. If the negatives are the focus in our relationships with our children, we will exasperate them, we will provoke them, and we will lose them. We have to build them up on the positives and the successes so that they can learn how to deal with instruction when dealing with the negatives. And I tell you, we often get that reversed. We often are focused on fixing the negatives because we think in doing that, we'll make them have the positives. And brethren, we're wrong when we do that. I promise you, we are wrong. We now, don't get me wrong, the F needs to be addressed. The F does need to be addressed if it shows up. However, you need to think about where your focus and your priority comes from. And what you hit first. And how you deal with it. And how you fix it. Alright? That's the key. And when we're dealing with raising our children, focusing on the positives are critical. It is very, very important. I want you to think about this. I want you to think about how God has described His relationship with His children. Where God puts His focus whenever He addresses His children. You can go look starting in the very beginning of the Bible when God said it was good when He made man, when He made woman. He liked what He saw. He liked what He did. And when He went on through Genesis and He started making the promises and when He started making His commitments to mankind, He always started on what was good. The end result, if you do what is right. God repeatedly calls His children and describes His children in the Old Testament prophecies as jewels and as gems. Listen, Isaiah 62:3, you are a crown of beauty in the hand of the Lord, a royal diadem in His hand. God's people in Zechariah are as stones in a crown sparkling in His hand. In chapter 2 of verse 8 of the same book, God refers to His people as the apple of His eye. I never knew where that actually came from. And didn't even know that that term was used there when God was describing His relationship with His people. We are the apple of His eye, He says. Every time God talks to His kings about what He will do for them, He talks to them if they will be faithful to Him. He will give them this and this and this. Now, God always has to address what is right. And God never leaves those exhortations without warnings and exhortations about what's going to happen if they do wrong. But you need to look where His focus is. And His focus is on building us up. On filling our buckets. Which is really the whole point of the book that I read. Everybody's got an invisible bucket. And everybody has an invisible dipper. And every interaction that you have with somebody is going to either be filling or dipping from that bucket. And that's the way it is in relationships. You can't just not be a filler or a dipper. When you engage and interact with people, you're either filling or you're dipping. Now here's the catch to it. When you fill someone else's bucket, it's the virtue in the relationship that your own bucket becomes filled. And the vice versa is true also. When you dip from somebody's bucket through negative interactions, your own bucket is depleted. And the more you dip, and the more negative interactions that you have, the worse your relationships with people will be. Now, when you think about it, that's true. We are the ones who will determine that kind of relationship with one another, with our children, and with our spouses. What we need to do is we need to be bucket fillers. And we need to refrain from dipping. Now, that doesn't mean you don't deal with negative issues with your children. That doesn't mean that God didn't deal with negative issues with His children. He did and He does. However, He emphasizes the positives first. And when He deals with the negatives, He does so in the right way. And He is a patient and a long-suffering God. As a matter of fact, today in our junior high class, we went all the way through all the kings, the united and divided kingdom. And here we are in Manasseh. And God said, "My patience has finally run out." Well, these kings in Israel and the kings in Judah had been ungodly and unrighteous for hundreds of years before then. But he was patient and he was long-suffering. And he did everything he could to try to have some type of positive impact through sending prophets and all kinds of other things in regards to miracles and delivering them. But they would not listen. So listen and follow the example of our Lord so that we can also be the same kind of fathers and the same kind of parents to our children as well. But not only being a bucket filler to our spouses, to our children, it's also important to be a bucket filler with our spouses. And there are very important dynamics in our relationships between husband and wife that you don't have with in how you engage and how you interact in personal relationships and how the relationships work. It's a unique dynamic. And it takes men and women long, long marriages to actually figure them out. Some of us never do. I speak on my own behalf. I think my wife has figured me out. That's why she throws up her hands and says there's no hope. However, it's important that we understand how these interactions work. I want you to listen to this. There was a study done, a research study with 700 couples back in 1992. And what these researchers did is they took these 700 couples and the newlyweds, and they recorded them, a 15-minute segment in how they interacted with one another dealing with some type of issue that was in their marriage. They gave them a scenario, and they videotaped it. And they recorded that 15 minutes, and then 10 years later, back in 2002, they researched the relationships of those people based on that 15-minute record or recorded script. And do you know, with 94% accuracy, they determined or predicted which marriages would fail and lead in divorce and which marriages would be successful. And they did so based on the interactions between the husbands and the wives and how they responded to one another and how they dealt with one another and how they interacted with one another during that one 15-minute segment. 94% accuracy, and that's 10 years later, 2002. Now, you may think, they got a 50-50 shot anyways because that many of them end up in divorce. Maybe so, true, but they had a 94% accuracy in prediction of those individual 700 marriages. And they did so based on a ratio. And the ratio that they found to be most efficient was that there were 5 positive interactions or moments, individual moments, to every 1 that could be considered negative. 5 to 1. And they said that ratio shows when you have that type of interaction with people, but especially with your spouses, because there are so many more interactions, that 5 to 1 ratio seemed very, very important. Do you know that they said when you have a 1 to 1 ratio, for every good thing you say, you counteract it with something negative? They said that those marriages fail. We have to be 5 times as positive as we do negative. And that's really the way we need to be. That's an important principle and an important relationship. The deal is this. You don't get what you need in your relationship by taking. They don't work that way. You get what you need out of a relationship with a husband and wife, especially by giving. You get what you need by giving. It's kind of a reverse to the golden rule. The golden rule says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, you don't do unto others. You don't do unto your wife as you want her to do unto you. She's not going to sit there for 10 hours on Saturday watching football with you and think that's just the best way to spend the day. So here we are at night. That doesn't work. That doesn't make her excited. She doesn't get the thrill that we do. You got to think about that. You need to treat her like she wants to be treated, not as like you want to be treated. And that's important, a very important modification and a very important thing. Make sure that you modify that. Make that golden rule. Make sure that you treat her like she wants to be treated, rather not as you want to. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29, Paul writes there also that there's kind of an upper limit. And those researchers determined that there was an upper limit in how relationships could interact. You can actually be too positive. If you don't address and deal with things that need to be addressed, and you kind of just sugarcoat it and you look over it, that actually results in hurting relationships. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29, Paul says, "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear." Sometimes our relationships require us to deal with things that aren't always the most favorite things to deal with. But you can deal with it in the right way, with the right words and the right tongue, in a way that results in a positive. But you got to deal with them. You can't just ignore them. Finally, we need to be bucket fillers with one another. Our relationships with one another need to be the kind of relationships where we understand the importance of our interactions. We don't get a whole lot of time to spend with each other throughout the week. Sometimes the only time we see each other is when we're here at services. We need to make sure that every interaction that we have is a valuable and leaves a positive impact on one another, as well as those who we come into contact with. Listen, Jesus in Matthew chapter 5, he told his disciples that their worship to the Lord, if they brought their sacrifice and they realized that they had aught with a brother, it wasn't acceptable. They needed to leave. They needed to fix it. Their relationships with one another preceded their worship to God. They couldn't be right with God unless they were right with one another. Brethren, we need to understand that impacts us today. Our relationships with one another must be good and they must be right in order for our worship and our relationship to be right with God. In James chapter 1, turn over there with me, please. Verses 25 through 27. He writes and describes what is really the pure and undefiled religion. James chapter 1, verses 25 through 27. He says, "But one who looks intently at the law of liberty, and abides by it, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man shall be blessed in what he does. And if anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, he deceives his own heart, and this man's religion is worthless. This is pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and our Father, to visit orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world." Why does James talk about making sure we visit the orphans, that you visit the widows, that you have relationships with those kind of people? Because James knows that those kind of people have empty buckets. And those buckets need to be filled. They need positive relationships. And we need to be the ones who take the responsibility and be the ones to fill them. Through our tongue, through our words, through our speech, through our actions. And we need to focus on individuals who need to be filled. Who need to have positive impact from us. If you would turn over to Philippians chapter 2, and we're going to close with this passage. In Philippians chapter 2, we read of the great bucket filler. And the great bucket filler is Jesus Christ. And I want you to read with me this passage, because this passage gave new meaning to me when I read it after thinking about this lesson. Listen to what Paul writes in Philippians chapter 2, beginning in verse 3. He says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each one of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. And have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Jesus Christ, who, although he existed in the form of God, he did not regard equality with God to be a thing grasped. But he emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant, and being made in the likeness of men, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. He is the greatest bucket filler because he emptied his own bucket that yours and that mine could be filled. He gave it all. He took everything that he had that was good and right, and he poured it out. And he poured it out so that our buckets could be filled when he didn't have to do that. Equality with God, that wasn't something that he thought was worth keeping. If it meant that you and I would have empty buckets. He didn't think it was worth it to stay in heaven. He didn't think it was worth it to stay on the throne. He didn't think it was worth it to be filled if it meant that we paid a consequence that we could not pay ourselves. He emptied himself. Now, we haven't this morning talked about what one must do to become a Christian. But let me tell you this. Jesus Christ is the greatest bucket filler that has ever lived. And he emptied his bucket so that you could have salvation, so that your buckets could be full, so that you didn't have to live a life that had no hope, that had no positives, that had nothing to look forward to. He did that for us. And all he asks you to do, all he asks you to do is what he did. Fill the bucket. Fill the bucket. Yours will be filled. Do what is right. Submit your life to God. Subject yourself to his authority and be saved. Be saved before it's eternally too late. If there's anything that we can do to help anybody know the Lord, become right with him, we ask you to please come now as we stand and we sing.